Welcome to the Abstract Veterans Podcast. Today, Dr. Char Gatlin and Kevin Sigginger speak with Randall Swanson. For more information, please visit limbic-cenc.org. Visit the Abstract Athlete for information and news. The Abstract Veterans Podcast with Char Gatlin and Kevin Sigginger.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to our third season of the Abstract Veteran Series. My name is Dr. Char Gatlin, and my co-host, Lieutenant Colonel retired Kevin Sigginger. Welcome you back. How you doing, Kevin? It's been a year since I've seen you.
Doing great, Char. It hadn't really been a year. It's just been a year in podcast years, but
I guess that's
calendar years. It's been about 3 months.
Yeah, no, we do sit on some meetings together, but it's just names. You know, there's no faces and no interactions, and we don't really get a chance to work together. But ladies and gentlemen, the GSC has approved us for another year working with the Olympic CISC Consortium. And as many of you know, what we do is we bring the research in and we break it down. We make it simple. We make it understandable, with a focus on the consumers, the end users, you know, and folks out there in the community that may not understand some of the scientific principles sort of involved in the research. But thanks for tuning back in. Love to have you. And this year, our focus is going to be health and wellness. So if you remember the first year, we were doing interviewing a lot of the practitioners and the researchers about their research. And then the second year, last year, we took it to a little more different level, looking at a more holistic approach with maybe some of the softer points, kind of putting it out there. And this year, we're going to do health and wellness. So we're looking at things like depression. We're looking at things like anxiety, looking at nutrition, diet, you know, smoking cessation. And what brings us to this one, cardiovascular risk factors. So with that, I'd like to introduce a very special guest today, Dr. Randall Swanson. Welcome, Dr. Swanson.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, no, glad you're here. So we've kind of given you the layout of kind of who we are and what we do. So with that, tell us a little bit about what you do, your background, and what you study.
Yeah, so Randall Swanson. So in my past life, I was an enlisted member of the United States Marine Corps before 9/11. And then after that, I was in the Army National Guard during college. So med school and PhD, I have a medical degree and a PhD. And so I specialize in physical medicine and rehabilitation, and I subspecialize in brain injury medicine. I've been on the faculty at the University of Pennsylvania for about the last 8 years with a co-appointment at the Philadelphia VA in their TBI Polytrauma Center. As a physician scientist, you know, I actively see patients primarily that need neurological rehabilitation, including patients with traumatic brain injury and other acquired brain injuries. And my research, when I first started off at Penn, I had my first grant was using a large pig model of brain injury. And then we transitioned to more clinical studies. And so currently I'm doing clinical and translational research using the limbic sensory cohort. We're looking at advanced neuroimaging and changes as it relates to either the TBI exposure history or modifiable cardiovascular risk factors, which I think is what we're going to talk about today.
So speaking of those risk factors, Char had forwarded me the article that you wrote, and a whole lot of multisyllabic syllable words scans pronounce. So in layman's term, or for a non-PhD MD, military police kind of guy, give me the Reader's Digest version of what that was all about. I think I have a grasp on it, but I'm looking forward to hearing how you can explain that.
Yeah. So, let's talk about in the clinic first. So, you know, when someone has a traumatic brain injury across the spectrum from concussion the whole way up to severe TBI, there's different, pathologies that actually happen in the brain. But the biggest one is something we would call a diffuse axonal injury, where there's a problem to sort of the electrical wires. And, you know, hand in hand with that is diffuse microvascular injury. So your brain is highly vascular. You know, it only weighs about 2% of your body weight, but it consumes 20% of all the blood flow every time your heart beats. So every time your heart beats, 20% of that cardiac output is going to your brain. And it's said that there's over 400 miles of blood vessels in your brain, of tiny little capillaries, okay? And so there is, when you have a traumatic brain injury, there's diffuse little trauma to those blood vessels. Okay, now, switching gears from traumatic brain injury, if we go to cardiovascular disease, we go back to the military. Like what I tell my patients and people, so all of us, when you're in the military, you know, you go to boot camp and you're in the group shower. So there might be 20 guys in there taking a shower. And every guy is standing under a shower head. Obviously, if the water gets shut off to the whole building, that's like, you know, your heart blew out, your aorta, okay, you're having a major problem. If one guy's standing underneath the shower head, all of a sudden water gets cut off on that pipe and he has no water, that's a big enough blood vessel that we would say that's a quote unquote stroke. But relatively, that's pretty less common compared to what's much more common. Everyone knows when they're showering and you got the shower head and eventually you get calcium buildup in some of the little holes and the water squirts off at a weird angle. So that's microvascular pathology. And over the course of 30, 40, 50, 60 years, we get some blockage of those tiny little arteries and it causes those problems. So in a big picture view, there's daily micro trauma from lifestyle related factors like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, lack of exercise, smoking, drinking, poor diet, things like this, which cause tiny little micro damage to those blood vessels. And it accumulates over decades to be much more important than some remote concussion when you're in your 20s. So our whole hypothesis was that when you have a traumatic event, yes, there's an acute trauma to the blood vessels, but the body has the natural ability to heal, maybe not completely to normal, but it does heal. Versus if you have daily micro trauma that's accumulating, it's really adding to this blood vessel problem that underlies a large portion of the dementias we see as you age. So that's sort of like a big picture view.
You were talking about some of these cardiovascular risk factors, you know, that you point out, like smoking, obesity, or maybe a sort of lack of proper nutrition, you know, PT or PT, physical training or exercise, things like that. You know, and there's probably several more that I'm missing right there. You know, it's, and I think you and I just mentioned this before we began, you know, it's the sum of all parts equals the whole, because there's going to be a lot of overlap between all of these, shall we say, deficiencies, you know, and what they, you know, add up to, unfortunately. But let's take it a step further. I mean, in your mind, and what are some steps that maybe individuals can take to reduce the risk of these CVDs, these risk factors, if you will, in either like routine care, which you're sure you're very familiar with, or even personal care. You know, if I'm sitting around in Fort Living Room, you know, watching the TV.
Yeah. So that's an excellent point. I would say, you know, this is really where it's very, very challenging, because it's hard for people to get a new habit. And it's normally, it's hard for us to study, because it's not normal that you have someone that has a very, very poor diet and they don't sleep, you know, well, and they drink, smoke a pack of cigarettes a day and drink a fifth of Jack at night, and they're an elite athlete, right? It's normally that there's a cornerstone habit, something that the person enjoys. So they start, you know, some physical activity or some sport. And then as they do that, they will start feeling better. And then they'll start thinking, well, I am noticing an association that if I eat healthier food, I can perform better. And it sort of just snowballs from there. So the hardest, or the thing is identifying something that the person is going to be able to do in their life, and they're going to be able to do consistently, that's going to become a habit. Because there's pretty good evidence to show it's actually worse to yo-yo, right? We want slow, steady change over time. We don't want somebody that goes on the crazy, super restrictive diet, and they lose a bunch of weight for 2 or 3 months, but they can't sustain it. And then they gain all the weight back, and they're yo-yoing back. That's probably actually worse than if you just slow and steady, try to have a 1% improvement, you know, every day or every month. We can talk about some of the details, but I really think diet is probably the biggest thing. Next to sleep, you have to be sleeping well, okay? After sleep, it's really diet. It doesn't matter if you're a marathon runner. If you're eating a poor diet, the arteries, everything, the system is still getting clogged up. Yeah, I'm going to pause there and see if you have follow-up questions. I don't want to, but yeah.
No, you hit it on the head. You know, it makes me sort of reflect a little bit back in my days as a soldier, you know, 15 plus years ago.
Yeah.
But I can remember, and I'm not naming any names right here, but, you know, the guys that would, and I guess what I'm getting at here is a significant overlap between everything. You know, they were the two-pack-a-day smokers that could max out the PT test. You know, it was, yeah. And then you had the folks that, you know, they were Dorita chips, Mountain Dew, you know, and hamburgers, cheeseburgers, you know, versus going to the chow hall, you know, and eating healthy. And it was just interesting in the way that you said that, to frame it in the back of my mind, that, you know, some of these guys had good behaviors, obviously great physical conditioning, but very poor behaviors, you know, on the other side of the wall, you know. And then you toss in the stress and everything else, and you mentioned the alcohol, which, you know, that was a huge issue back in the day too. But not really a question. I just thought I'd put it out there, you know, thinking back. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are probably laughing when I say this too. I mean, some of the individuals and the behaviors that we were around then, you know, when we were younger, maybe, you know, didn't care as much, you know, versus now where we're getting a little white and a little, you know, heavier around the midsection and, you know, things like that. So definitely, yeah. I'm glad that it was brought up.
It's very interesting because I would say two points. First, if we go to our preclinical pig models, okay? So my colleagues in neurosurgery at Penn, they have this model where they can do a closed head injury and scale it from concussion to, you know, coma. And so when we do a concussion in the pigs, yes, if acutely after the injury, there is microvascular pathology, but by about 1 month post the injury, we can't tell the difference from the controls, let alone if we go out a year. Conversely, my colleagues in cardiology at Penn, they have a diabetic hypercholesterolemic pig. So it's a pig that has diabetes and high cholesterol. They feed it a bad diet. So after only 6 months of being diabetic and high cholesterol on this bad diet, the pathology that's seen in the brain is more than 3 days after we do a concussion. And it accumulates over time. But the thing is, this happens decades before in humans. You're going to have a heart attack. You're going to have a stroke. Okay. So myself, yeah, when I was in the Marine Corps, I was super skinny, in shape, but I could eat whatever I wanted, you know, bad food. And when I got out and I started, you know, with medical school, I ballooned up. I gained like 30, 40 pounds. My pre, you know, medical school physical, they told me I had high cholesterol, to go on cholesterol meds, they wanted me to. And it's because those habits that I had from the Marine Corps of eating a really poor diet with tons of calories, I was burning things off because I was young and I had a high metabolism and I was exercising all the time. But that doesn't mean my arteries weren't being clogged and I wasn't causing damage. And you know, as a doctor, it's easier for me to counsel men because most men can relate to this analogy. And I tell them, it's not like cardiovascular disease is just the heart or the brain or whatever. It's one body, right? It's circulating all around. And so one of the easiest ways, you know, I remember going to med school and first thing they talk to you about is trying to convince someone to quit smoking. And it's easy for a male because we say, you know, 20, 30 years before you have a heart attack or stroke, you know what you get? Erectile dysfunction. And so those same little blood vessels that feed the penis are the ones that feed the brain. And I tell my patients, you don't really have to go to the doctor. When you start having those issues, you know that you've got cardiovascular disease, okay? And it's one body. And so anything that we can do to promote cardiovascular health is going to promote overall brain health, kidney health, lung health. It's not like there's a different diet or prescription for the different organs. It's one united body.
Well, you mentioned it prior to Char's comment, but you said when you start exercising, you start feeling better. Yeah. And one of the questions that immediately came to my mind, because it happens for me, it's much easier for me to eat healthier or not eat as badly, mm-hmm, when I'm exercising. And I'm wondering, is that a physical thing or a mental thing? Because sometimes I'm thinking I don't want to waste the effort I just put in by eating whatever it is I'm getting ready to throw in my mouth, versus is it also a physiological thing of my body's feeling better and I don't want to pollute it?
I think that's a very hard question to answer accurately, but I'll tell you, I think it's a combination of both things. I think the science will show that, you know, you sort of get this inertia, and the better you feel, then when you eat bad food, you're more likely to realize what it's doing to your body. Like, I remember my family, there was about 20 people in my family that came to my Marine Corps boot camp graduation. And on the way home, we stopped and ate, and I got a candy bar. And I hadn't had any candy in like 3.5 months. And I ate that Snickers candy bar, and about a half hour later, I was puking because it was such a sugar toxic rush to my body where I wasn't allowed any of that stuff for 3.5 months. So as you start eating healthier and cleaner and you're exercising, you're probably, you are physiologically changing things in your body, and you're feeling better, and it's easier for you to recognize when you eat that bad food what it's doing to you, you know. So
it's kind of like, I had a friend several years ago that was tried out becoming a vegetarian, you know, mm-hmm. no issue with it, and they did it, I want to say, for about 6 months, and then for whatever reason decided to switch back over, and it was a huge shock to the system, because they weren't used to, you know, digesting or putting that type of, you know, that level of protein, for lack of a better term, or meat and maybe the fat content into their body. And they had some, shall we say, some significant issues. But one thing that you mentioned here, look at it a little bit different way, is a lot of people, I think, try to compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is they're trying to compartmentalize like healthcare, you know, or not healthcare, but healthy lifestyle. So, you know, and you kind of hit on, you know, hey, I smoke a little bit here, but I'm doing enough here, you know, to move forward, or, you know, I'm going to have an extra few beers, you know, at night, but I'm going to get some more steps in the morning. So there's these compartmentalized and sort of compensating strategies that you mentioned. But you also mentioned a lot of these sort of inherent limitations that folks may run across trying to implement these strategies, you know, because you're not forced to run 5 times a week, you know, and you have to actually get into your car. Here's an analogy I used the other day for it. I had a buddy of mine. He used to work from home, and he was an interesting fellow, right? But he would get up in the morning. He would get showered. He'd put on his coat and tie, suit, whatever you not. He'd get in his car. He would drive around the block, get a cup of coffee from coffee house, Starbucks, whatever, and then he would come back to his house, and then he would work.
Right.
And I mean, he would have his little lunchbox, and then he would take his little lunchbox at lunchtime, go to a park, eat lunch, and come back. And then the evening, he did the same thing. He would leave, you know, go have a beer or something at happy hour, and then come back. But he had to do that to maintain that discipline, you yeah. know. And I mean, it takes a lot of, I don't know, internal fortitude, I guess, is the term, and just, you know, staying on top of it. But I think you had a really good comment earlier too, and I'm kind of rambling here a little bit, that even though that we think that we are staying in good shape, this, that, and the other, but the arteries are getting clogged up, you know, because those behaviors, you know, there's nothing you really, really, really do about it. You know, I mean, one accepts out of not do it. You know, as I said, this isn't really a question. It's just more of a,
yeah,
sort of an analogy and a comment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, our bodies are miraculous machines. And all the time patients come to us when they're in their 50s or 60s, and now they've had, let's say, a concussion or more moderate brain injury. And it's sort of like, you know, all the wheels have fallen off, and they're like, I don't understand, I was functioning so well. But your body has a ton of compensatory mechanisms, and we don't realize a lot the internal degeneration that's going on until all of a sudden, bam, we fall off the cliff. I had a thought while you guys were talking, to get back to Kevin's point. One of the main things I think about changing the diet, and then whenever you go back and eat something that's different, is, I'm not an expert in this, I don't want to overspeak, but really the research is mounting that you're changing your microbiome, right? We have roughly about 30 trillion cells that are human cells in our body. And, you know, different estimates, they say you have about 39 trillion microbes. We're actually more, you know, microbial species than we are human. There's more microbial cells than there are human cells in the human body. And as you change the different foods, especially as you have more whole plant foods in your diet and you're feeding with good prebiotics, which essentially is fiber, right? The number one thing humans in Western cultures are deficient in is fiber. So as we have that prebiotic fiber and we're feeding our microbiome, we're changing the bacteria of our microbiome. And there's a lot of research of how that's interacting with our brain for brain health and wellness, anxiety, depression, all of those things. And when we introduce a new food, that's why we can have very disrupted GI symptoms and, you know, anxiety, depression, all of this. It's easier to see in an animal. You know, my wife is a wildlife rehabilitator. And so she knows you're working with all these different animals. You have to slowly change their food because you're changing the microbiome and stuff. All the times she gets animals in and someone says, oh, you know, I got this animal and I fed it like cat's milk. Is that okay? And, you know, she's like, no, because they didn't evolve to eat that. They have a different system. Okay. So probably I think the next 10 years, what's going to come out with the gut brain axis and the microbiome and on all of those things is going to be really cool for science. I mean, that probably underlies a lot of why there's such a difference when you're eating certain foods and then you change. You know, you got to slow and steady. Okay.
Yeah, I have a personal experience with the slow and steady. So probably about 1 trillion of my biomes a year ago was French fries. And so I have sworn off French fries. I haven't had one in over a year. I am looking forward to going to Germany for Christmas because they don't call them French fries. They call them pommes. So I'm going to legally get away with eating a French fry in Germany because by a different name. But so over the past year, I've lost 55 pounds.
Wow, that's amazing.
Slow, gradual. There was, because I've done that yo-yo thing for... Yeah. For my
23 years, by the way.
My 23 years in the Army, I did the yo-yo thing. And the yo-yo thing was every 6 months just prior to the PT test to make sure I made the tape test. And you know, it was not a healthy living style. And so I have, you know, I walk, you know, somewhere between 2.5 to 4 miles a day. And it's a habit. And I really feel bad physically and mentally if I don't get that walk in. And I'm crabby. I'm grumpy. And it just, you know, it spirals negatively if I don't do that positive thing. So that the, what you said with the slow progression, small changes, I think is a great thought. Obviously that is not a new thought. That has been the universal answer. What would be your recommendation for vets, 50s, you know, mid to late 50s, early 60s, that they're like, well, it's too late. You know, I've already done, you know, done the damage. There's nothing I can reverse. I might as well go out happy. What is your advice to them?
My advice to them is, I would strongly disagree that, you know, the human body, yes, you're not going to go back to your body when you were 20 years old, but the body is continuously turning over. Right? Cells are constantly being broken down and constantly, you know, made again. And there is some mounting evidence that even things like atherosclerosis or the plaque in the arteries can be reversed. You know, there was a study done a while ago. I don't want to misquote. I don't have the reference right in front of me, but the gist was they took patients that had cardiovascular disease and they needed bypass surgery. And one group got the bypass surgery. And, you know, the appropriate medications, and they looked at their outcomes over a year. And another group, they got lifestyle intervention, diet and exercise. And at the end of the year, those people in the diet and exercise group actually did better than those that got the cardiovascular disease, that got the surgical intervention. And when they did repeat angiograms, when they're looking at their arteries, they had actually increased in the luminal diameter of their coronary arteries. They had less plaque. And so, if we think about like this, let's say, and it's not just veterans, my own family and my own, you know, family members will say, you know, well, I'm 65 years old, it's too late for me. It really isn't. So think about this. If you have all the pipes in your house, right, and your house is 60 years old, all of us know if we cut into some pipes, there's going to be sludge in there, okay? So now let's say that you have, you know, miles of pipes in your house, like your arteries. And if you cut out a 1 foot section of pipe and you put a brand new piece in there, now you've done a bypass. Intuitively, we all know the water's still circulating around in the pipe. So within a few months, it's just going to re-equilibrate and the gunk is going to be back over that new bypass portion, right? As opposed to another thing I tell my patients is, think if I could give you a brand new car, any car, whatever you want. And, you know, some will say a Porsche or Lamborghini or Harley or whatever. Okay, so you get this brand new car and it says, you know, you got to rotate the tires, you got to change the oil, and you have to put only unleaded gas in it. Well, instead, they put diesel fuel into that car. And then they run it until the car's all clogged up. They're going to the mechanic and they're saying, you know, hey, can you fix this? The mechanic says, you know, if you just start putting unleaded gasoline in the car, you can turn this around. And the patient's like, the person's like, no. Give me some additive that I can dump in the gas can so I can still keep putting diesel fuel in there and drive the car. That's what these medications do. The high blood pressure medicines, the cholesterol medications, it's a false sense of security that we can give somebody these medicines and then they can continue to eat or live their way they are. And it's somehow protecting them from all these diseases. Yeah, it does help some, but the best thing is the root cause. And if you can start exercising, if you can start just crowding out the junk, right? You don't have to go on some extreme diet, just stop eating processed food. If you do nothing else, you know, if you pick up some wrapper and you can't understand the ingredients, it's like monosodium, you know, whatever. It doesn't say like black beans, whole wheat, things like this. Don't put it in your body. If you just start there and start exercising, you're going to have more of an impact than any of these drugs that we could give you, right? And last point is, with modern medicine, you're probably going to live longer, but you're going to quote unquote die longer. So the more you have chronic diseases, the more you're going to live life for the last 15, 20 years of your life where you're not maybe independent. You can't do the things that you want to do. As opposed, if you start now exercising, eating healthy, you're going to be more independent and be able to do the things that you enjoy longer in life, which is what we all want, right?
You got me feeling sorry for myself. Now, I was going to take the day off out of the gym, but I'm definitely going after this. And I've got two growlers of a really good Hefeweizen from up the road that I'm thinking about pouring out, unfortunately. I don't think I will, but it's definitely some self-reflection here. So we got, I'm going to the gym after this. So Ron's tagged us. I mean, we're about hitting our time here for the podcast. So let me ask you this, actually. I'm going to switch back over to the research side for a minute. Yep. You know, and I was just kind of perusing the review that you sent. Where do you see this research going next few years? And where would you like to see it go?
What I would like to see is that we show enough evidence that we can convince a large percentage of the veteran population that yes, they had a concussion like I did. I've had three in my life, right? But there's nothing you can do to go back in time and change this. But there are a lot of things that you can do to positively impact your brain health as you age. So what I would hope is that this research would contribute to the mounting initiative within the VA healthcare system to focus on whole health and to focus on giving the patients back control to say, yeah, you might have had this injury, but there's all these things that you can control to change the trajectory of your long-term health. And let's focus on that, right? I think the truth is, I think we have enough research to show the link between cardiovascular disease and brain health and everything. We need more implementation science. We need studies to say how people know this information. It's not that they need more information. They need the tools to create the healthy habits, or we need research on how do we put systems in place so that the healthy habit is the default choice, right? And it's harder to make the unhealthy habit. I think that's the future of where the science needs to go. Okay. That's just my opinion.
No, it's a very interesting point with the implementation component. Very interesting.
Yeah. And Char wanted me to close it out, but I did have. Yeah, ever since the first comment about the Marine Corps group showers, I was just thrown off with the. I wonder if the National Guard did that as well, but it does give me a flashback to Officer Candidate School when the TAC officer split us into three groups, yeah, and showed us how we could do the, you know, the three S's, in the morning in 3 minutes. And so he, it was like 1 minute, you're in one station and you had half a face shaved, and then you had to move to the other station. And, you know, it was, you know, half a head washed. It was a exercise, and, you know, obviously you couldn't get it done in 3 minutes, but you can get it done a lot faster than 45 minutes. So that's just one thing I was thinking about when you mentioned the group shower thing. But a lot of really, really good points. And this is probably the best way we could start off the season three with the healthy habits and the healthy brain, because it is, you know, and I'll use my non-doctor terminology, it is one system, and we got to take care of it from top to bottom. And we seem to treat everything as one instead of a complete thing. So you've got a toe ache, or you've got a, you know, tennis elbow, or you've got a headache, or whatever it is. And everybody wants to go to the one event that might have caused that issue, as opposed to accumulation of things. And so I think this is a really good launching point for our series this year.
And I had one last comment I'll throw in there. I was sitting there listening to it when Kevin was saying it. And this is, it's a balance here, and I'm not trying to go over time here. Are we good, Ron, for just one, for just a few more minutes up top? Okay, thanks. So I was one of the last tobacco classes at Rainier School. And my class date was 600, so that's 23 years ago. And I can remember, you know, the RIs coming around and taking a survey, you know, hey, who here started using tobacco? And I'm just saying this because I'm going to be honest, and some people raised their hands, and they were met with a really negative response, you know. But that started to be the military's push at this point, at least the Army, in my mind, is starting to get rid of, to start pushing more of these healthy lifestyles, you know, yep, to the tobacco cessation, you know, this, that, and the other. But on the flip side of the coin, you know, I'm thinking, you know, when I'm going through, sometimes I'm not promoting tobacco use here. I used to chew tobacco, you know, but I mean, it's something, you know, when you're 10-mile walks at 2 a.m, you're droning, going off in the other way, you know, this, that, and the other. So there was that component, I would say, of stress relief to it. But that was probably more in the short term, you know, and then what we just covered in this podcast, you know, things sort of build up to the long term. So just a different way of doing it. And another, you know, comment too, and I'm not, once again, I'm just being candid, you know, when the military started to push, or the Army in my case, a lot of this, you know, healthy lifestyle choices in the military, they took how do I say this, be politically correct, they took a lot of fun out of it, you know, because sometimes you know, like the Mountain Dew or the candy bar, or you need stuff like that, you know, particularly in the field when it's cold, it's nasty, you know, or you're having to, you know, shoot, move, communicate, the whole nine yards. You know, I don't want to call it a vice per se, but sometimes those unhealthy lifestyles or choices or products come in handy, you know. So there is that balance, you know. And I'm not an MD by stretch of imagination, nor do I have a background in health and wellness, but I just thought I'd put that out there. You know, sometimes there is that weird balance. Can it get you through, you know, but does it really hurt you in the long run? The answer is yes and yes. So yeah, just thoughts on that real quick, and we'll close this out.
I think that that's an excellent point. And unlike other addictions, you know, we all have to eat to survive. And I think any, you know, smoking a cigarette, you know, a couple times a month, you know, it's not going to do anything long-term to your health. Just like eating some snacks and, you know, cakes, pastries. It's when it becomes, every day becomes a holiday, right? And the last thing I'll say to close it out, you know, for me, I try to bring back to my patients after they've had a neurological injury, we need to focus on lifelong neurorehabilitation, NEURO. 5-letter words centered on you and empowering the person that you're in control for a lot of this. N is nutrition, good, healthy, evidence-based nutrition, plant-centric, tons of fiber. E is the exercise. I point them to the U.S. guidelines for exercise. You, we talked about, is you. R, rest, relaxation, reconnect with family and friends, and re-engage in active learning. And the O is optimization of modifiable risk factors like your blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, smoking, hearing loss. One thing I got to put a plug in here, you know, the best available balance of evidence shows even if you had a severe TBI, yes, that might increase your risk for dementia by 3-4%, but untreated hearing loss is about 8%. It's double the risk than even if you had a severe brain injury. And there's so many veterans I see that don't want to wear their hearing aids. That is actually much more of a risk of you getting dementia than the remote head injury. So I always got to put that plug in there. Okay.
No, great, great plug. I mean, this is why I love doing this podcast. We learn something new every day. So I tell you what, hey, thanks for joining us, Dr. Swanson. And as Kevin said, I'll reiterate, this was probably one hell of a way to start the season three, you know, bringing in health and wellness, and hopefully the message got out there. I mean, these were some really good points that we covered and things that I wouldn't have thought about. But we appreciate your candor. You know, thank you for being here and thank you for your time. And, you know, hey, folks out there listening, if you have any questions, you know how to find us. If we don't have the answers, we'll put you or point you in the right direction for sure. These are very important topics, you know, and not only for veterans themselves, but your caregivers, your families, and your communities. And you guys out there know what I'm talking about. So take care of yourselves. Maybe cut down on that next beer. You know, I'm not going to go dump mine. I'm still up in the air on that. But anyway, I will be going to the gym. So with that, I'd like to thank my co-host, Kevin. Once again, Dr. Swanson, for joining us. Ron in the box up top and the team that remains unseen. It's been a great podcast, great way to kick off the season number three, and hopefully we'll see you down the road. Until then, take care. Be safe.
Thank you to Randall Swanson for joining Dr. Char Gatlin and Kevin Sickinger today on the Abstract Veterans Podcast. For more information, please visit limbic-cenc.org. The Abstract Veterans is produced by The Abstract Athlete. For more information, please visit theabstractathlete.com. And as always, please follow us on our social media platforms under The Abstract Veterans, The Abstract Doctors, and The Abstract Athlete. See you soon with our next episode. Thank you.